I got a lot of views. I got a lot more patrons all within 30 days. It was crazy. At the same time, COVID hit. And I was still working a full-time job and doing this. And so there was a very much rise and fall of all these kind of emotions. I got into a habit of just writing. But there reached a point where it was stressful, you know, getting, I think at the time I was only doing 3 chapters a week. There was all this kind of stress that would build up and build up and build up from all sorts of sources and stuff. So over the years, I've definitely learned to pare down as much stress as I possibly can.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast where the host is recording after a video gaming marathon. With him today is Nico Nigonella, author of Unbound and other awesome books. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. Awesome. How are you? I mean, you're tired apparently.
I am a little bit tired. Yeah, I told you about the brain fog. Like, it's the best thing. You're completely immersed in that game. You're really going in, and then you're blinking, and you're like, everything hurts. I shouldn't be doing this anymore. I'm old.
Yeah. Yeah, gaming past midnight is, it becomes a risky situation after a certain time. Oh, my God.
The last time I did that was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I, like, played through the night because it was so good. But... it's kind of like alcohol. You got to know your limits. You got to know, like, hey, I can do this today. I can binge. But then, I mean, they even call it binge drinking and binge gaming, right?
Yeah. And then you got to have a recovery day after. Drink lots of water.
Yeah. I mean, we already talked about the fact that you no longer really have the time to play video games. In the bonus stuff or the other half of the podcast that we recorded before this podcast, you can check it out on Patreon, by the way. Wink, wink, hashtag ad. But now we're going to talk about books. So, hey, do you want to pitch us Unbound?
Oh, do I?
I mean, some authors have literally gone like, no, it's a crap book. Don't read it. Okay.
No, I love my books. Unbound is a story of Felix. Who is it's an isekai story or a portal fantasy where he's taken from Earth and brought to the continent where things operate on a with game mechanisms he has to kind of discover or figure out why he's there and how to survive. That is sort of the very kind of first brush introduction to this series. And things are a lot more complicated than that. And a lot more kind of, dire than that. But it has been a very, very fun book to write. Okay. And I've really enjoyed the process. Yeah.
Before I ask you about, the system and all kind of stuff, because it's always fun to hear about. I wonder if you order the paperback, do you just send people like sheaves of paper? Or
I've had that thought, like, I'll do a Kickstarter and it'll be the unbound hardback. I'll just come in pieces, they'll so get their own glue, bind it yourself.
The deconstructed books.
Yes, it's very artistic. Yeah. Like, no, I've had the same.
Send them a log, like a wooden log.
Get some ink and some, a little printing press and your own wooden log. Figure it out.
And then the audiobook, like, just write it down yourself.
Yeah. Transcribe from the audiobook. Yeah, take care of it.
Oh man. Maybe on April 1st, but probably not.
Probably not. They're probably a bad move.
Maybe. Probably. That being said, there's some cool April 1st stuff happening, I think. So we'll see what happens this year. It's going to be nice.
Usually is.
Cool. So first of all, tell us more about a little bit of the system and how that works.
Well, Unbound is it's based on skills, skills and titles generally. So the a lot of Lit RPG systems have levels and classes, and they focus a lot on traditional kind of RPG structure, which is fine, and I like. But it is when I started writing this one, I wanted to I was kind of looking at a lit RPG world from a sense of like, all right, what is not realistic, because obviously that throws a lot of things out the window, but what sort of makes sense for a world that maybe developed this lit RPG system naturally? Because that's kind of the world of Unbound. Everything, like, the system exists and it's not unnatural. It's not a, you know, it's not technology. It's not, you know, thing. It's sort of a expression of the world itself that people in, you know, on the continent kind of experience as their normal every day to day. And so I was like, all right, well, what would be kind of included? So things like inventory, I didn't include, you know. Trying to think of other things. A lot of the things that are a little bit more gamey, I didn't include. So you have, you know, you have your health, you have stamina, as sort of indicators of your well-being. And levels also exist. But there aren't classes. Not in any sort of traditional sense. And it's mostly just accruing skills, which in the world is, for an average person, is very difficult to do. If you are unbound, like the main character is, it's easier to do. And so accruing skills and then accruing titles. And the way to do those is you have to, do certain tasks, you know, in certain ways and with enough stress, you know, and then the system will engage and, hey, you've learned the skill, or you achieved this thing and you got a title. Now the title boosts, you know, X, you know, gives you extra stats, or it gives you know, some sort of boost to a skill. And that is generally the bare bones setup. There is a little bit more to it that sort of like underpins it, but that is kind of more story stuff. You know, that's kind of spoilery to an extent. And that's more of like how it functions, you know, how it interacts in the world itself. But from a very kind of schematic sense, that's how it works. There's the bigger thing, which is essentially when they reach certain, when skills reach a certain level, they temper or they tier up at certain increments. And when they temper, people take, you know, essence drafts to then imbue that skill with a certain feature that's inherent in the essence draft. And depending on what the essence draft is, and there's essence drafts of, you know, clarity, essence drafts of fire, you know. And again, those are hard to make. It's an alchemical process and it's closely guarded secrets. So a lot of the world building influences the systems itself, especially in regards to power levels and how much access people have to certain things. So whenever they're tempered, when you get, it's three skills per kind of aspect, body, mind, and spirit. And then when all nine skills temper, then you kind of advance your tier. So you start at beginner and then you advance to apprentice tier and then onward from there.
With your like main personality strength wise.
You kind of have to make a decision on like, hey, what am I going to focus on? And for in the world itself, for most people where skills are hard to learn, it's sort of like, well, these are the nine skills I've managed to figure out. So I guess that's what I'm going with. And then if you're part of like a guild or part of, you know, an organization where they've kind of handed down, well, this is how you learn this skill and it's a secret. You can't tell anyone how you learned it, you know, but this is how. And then, you know, now you're above the others because you're, you know, they control information and stuff like that. Which I made all those decisions. You know, that's the general system, but I made all those systems like that because narrative reasons, really, because they all kind of fuel kind of conflict, you know, from a story perspective. They're all conflict tension levers that you can kind of pull on to be like, okay, well, they're not sharing information because they want to maintain the supremacy of all of their people knowing these skills, which are better than a more readily available skills that kind of the general public can get, and things like that. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right. And it's called Unbound because the main character
is, well, it's a, to both the term Unbound, he is unbound, but the phrasing, essentially, they're not bound by the same rules that natives are.
So on the, by the end of the first book, on the scale from like farm boy to OP god, where are we at?
We're pretty strong. Okay. It is more of a, he gets pretty strong pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And that is partially because, I like that stuff about, Lit RPG. Mm-hmm. I like writing kind of a more powerful character. It's sometimes cheap to call it like wish fulfillment, but it's a kind of a fantasy of, you know, if I did this thing and I got really powerful, and that would be really fun and cool, and I could do these cool things. So that kind of fueled it a bunch. It's fun, you know? But by the end, it's very strong, but certainly nowhere near the top.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We, I, one of the big things I always wanted to write is because I wanted to write a OPMC, overpowered main character, but I also wanted to, consistently keep them challenged, you know, in a way that's both believable and fun, you know, and that's what I've always tried to strive for with each book.
Okay, so are you like, how successful were you with that, and like, what are some of the pitfalls that you find in that?
I think as far as success with keeping him kind of challenged, I think I've been successful with that. It's actually, I've learned a lot of lessons from, you know, what I've read elsewhere, trying to take in kind of challenges, because the main thing when you have a main character that's, you know, very strong, for instance, well, how do you challenge them, or how do you present a threat that is a threat if they're stronger than that person per se. And a lot of it has to do with, again, it's tension, it's maintaining those tensions. And sometimes it's, the character doesn't know this threat's ongoing, but other people do. And maybe they're not talking because there's a problem with, you know, a relationship there. So they're not, they're at odds for some reason. So they're not sharing information. And so that threat becomes more of a threat as it goes on, or it's one of physical distance, you know, the character is super powered, but is 100 miles in the wrong direction and something's happening back there. Then it's up to the people that are there to handle that situation. And that, that is, those are all kind of ways to kind of handle, tension and handle the conflict in a way that's both, can both be satisfying and, you know, and sort of like, there's that certain kind of aspect of like frustration, you know, that is sort of necessary for a conflict. Cause like you're invested, you're like, oh man, why? You know, I hate that this is happening and stuff, but what's going to happen? Turn the page.
Read to find out.
Yeah, read to find out.
Yeah.
And sorry, what was the other part of the question? You said...
It's fine. No, it was the question of how OP, and then basically what kind of struggles did you have with it, and did you overcome them? But I think we can talk about that in the third question a little bit more.
Okay.
Speaking of questions, what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
The best advice I ever got, I'd say the number one best advice I ever got was, not about writing. It was actually something I learned when I was doing, webcomics, and it was, consistency. It is committing to a time, for, you know, posting, and then delivering on that repeatedly, you know.
Yeah.
Generally without fail. And if there is fail, clear communication about why, you know, and that's only become more important. I knew, cause when I was doing web comics, I would do one page a week, and it took me like something like 10 hours to make one page. And it was extremely labor intensive. And there's not a lot of like feedback like I've had with writing. So it was very like a lonely thing, and I would miss stuff all the time, and it was a big bummer. Only when I was consistent that I saw like some more engagement, because, you know, you're consistently do this thing, but it's also one of those things where it's like, you know, you're consistently posting into the void, and that's, you know, you got to change things up at some point. But yeah. But the consistency was a huge thing. So when I went into writing on Bound, I started writing on Royal Road. Mm-hmm. I started writing it in November 2019. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write 20 chapters before I start posting. So I have a buffer for myself. I also knew I wanted to do a Patreon. So I wanted to set that up. So I did that, and that took me forever because there was no sense of urgency. I was still figuring things out. So between November and like February 2020, I wrote 20 chapters, which now that's extremely slow for me. But for then I was like, hey, that was fantastic. And so when I started posting, I already had 20 chapters that I immediately put on Patreon. The only thing I'd do differently is I would have also, you know, built up like a 5-chapter buffer, personal buffer on Patreon. Yeah. So when I inevitably got tired or couldn't get the chapter done in time, you know, I'd have something to fill the gap so you wouldn't have anything. But yeah, consistency is probably the number one thing. And but the best writerly advice, like straight writer advice, is just in regards to characters and specifically about making sure that the characters are developed when they hit the page, before they hit the page. And it's mostly like, to clarify, it's like, you should, and this is my own, obviously, personal opinion on it, but you should have the character figured out before you kind of introduce them, you know? Not that the reader should, but that you should, so that you should have an idea of like who they are, what they like, what they hate, what they, you know, are afraid of at least in the sense that that's important for the story. Because having a character that's like fully fleshed out hitting the page is so much more interesting than having a character that is essentially a blank slate hitting the page and then slowly finding the character throughout the story. That is something that has resonated with me and stuck with me for a very long time. And is only, in my opinion, only ever improves kind of the narrative because you have something to hold on to with who the character is, as well as things to anchor conflict to and relationships and, you know, the plot itself, you know?
And how do you do that? Because in my book, I mean, like we talked about our origins as role players, right? Where you're like, you do a new character every round or whatever. But in books, it doesn't really work all that well. And I actually struggled to find the main character or what the characters are about for 180,000 words before I actually, you know, was like, oh, that's what it is.
Sometimes, and especially for people who are more discovery writers than plotters, it is something that is like, you just got to do it until you figure it out. You know, that is absolutely viable. And my particular bit of advice, is definitely predicated on the fact that I outline heavily. I do a lot of pre-prep before I write anything, because I find it streamlines my entire process by, you know, front loading all my work. The back end, which is just the writing part, becomes so much faster because but I don't have to think about, you know, why this is happening or this or that. I know the progression is just kind of writing the prose, writing this and kind of hitting those emotional beats. But I also know which emotional beats am I reaching for because I know the character. So that said, the way I do it is essentially I take the character, I will usually build them around kind of an idea, you know, whether that idea is just compassion is good, you know, it might be one, or, you know, the plucky sidekick is another, you know, version. And then I kind of tease out details from that. And a lot of it for me comes from kind of looking at the whole thing. It's from looking at the whole thing as opposed to looking at just this one character, sort of how do they fit into the kind of tapestry that the whole book is. And that's easier when I've outlined the thing or when I've at least outlined one book, and then I can be like, oh, okay, well they're this because they have this relationship with these other people, or at least I want them to have this sort of relationship with these characters. So what does that say about them? Mm-hmm. And I'll sometimes work kind of like backwards with that. Like I'll have like a skeleton plot kind of figured out. Mm-hmm. And then start kind of like, oh, well, I do want, you know, some characters that they're going to bounce off of. I want like a core group of characters. And in my opinion, you know, you want them different enough, but then they still need to have those bonds. DMing for my friends for a long time. I think, just 10 years. We've been on this like one campaign for 10 years. It's taught me a lot of how to create hooks for people. So when they have characters, like, well, how do I get them interested in this other thing? You know, they've already demonstrated that they're, you know, they have this kind of personality trait or they're honorable or whatever. And like, oh, let me put this sort of thing in and they should respond to it. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, because it's different because it's collaborative storytelling, you know, and I'm not in control of them. Mm-hmm. Which leads to a lot of improv, which is another good thing for writing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of holistic looking at it. I do think there's a lot of value in the whole, what is their biggest fear? What is their biggest desire? You know, what is the, you know, what is their misbelief or the lie they tell themselves, which usually ties into their fear, you know, and it drives a lot of the tension with the character. So if a character, you know, believes that the world is terrible, you know, their greatest desire is to just be accepted, you know, but they believe the world's terrible and they're afraid that they'll get rejected. So the believing the world is terrible inherently is the misbelief, or it could be in this case. And believing they're going to be rejected, their fear feeds in, that misbelief kind of feeds into that, which kind of keeps them from accepting that the world is good or whatever. And using that as sort of like a kernel for then expressing, well, how do they interact with others now? Well, clearly, you know, some people they'll do well, they were born here and they until age 12, they did this and they, you know, their parents are this and you do a genealogy tree, you know, you go down the Tolkien route, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that either. Other than just getting lost in the weeds sometimes.
And then you start with like, and Abraham begat Ishmael.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Getting lost in the world building weeds is something that's always to be kind of worried about.
I don't know. Like for most of my books, I was earlier saying like, hey, how do you find out, right? Because I love to discover the background of my characters through writing. That's really cool. And I think if I did that beforehand, I wouldn't write the book. Right? Because I mean, in Torchbearer at the end now, there's three new characters that I have to kind of flesh out and have a general idea of what they are, who they are. But I think sometimes it makes sense to just explore them through the lens of the main character. So you got to have the main character figured out to some degree, I think. Or the point of view characters, I think. And the other ones, I think you can be more lenient about because you can discover them as the story goes along. If you're okay with rewriting, which famously I am.
Yeah, rewriting, I mean, especially in that sense, you know, when you're discovery writing, unless you're just really, really good at improv and like just making up on the fly, and maybe your first draft is great, exactly what you wanted. But I've seen a lot where discovery writing benefits a lot from rewriting because you take all the stuff like you've figured out and you slowly kind of meandered towards and like maybe like, oh, and hey, this point seems interesting. And then when you rewrite, you like just make it so, hey, that point was intentional the entire time and not found 20,000 words into it or, you know, 30, 40, 100,000 words into it.
That being said, I think you are, other than Travis Baldry, the only other outliner I've had on this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, like, who admitted it?
I outline heavily, yeah. I leave empty spaces, you know, because like you, for a long time, I would be a discovery writer because I would have the same feeling like, hey, if I kind of poke at this project too much, I won't want to write it anymore because I feel like I've written it to an extent. That was how I was for a long, long time. And then what changed that was a drive and commitment to consistently writing a thing. You know, the first Unbound book was the very first book I ever finished.
Talk about it too.
Hey, congrats.
I think that is that though, right? I'm enjoying rewriting right now so much that I think the fear of, you know, over-engineering it might be unfounded in my case.
Yeah.
Because I am literally doing that. So here, here we are.
Yeah. So, no, it's great.
Do you edit then, or do you like have like a very good finished first draft?
I generally have a pretty, I have a solid first draft. Mm-hmm. There's always like a little continuity errors, or there's, you know, typos and stuff like that. That's always going to happen. Just cause especially when you've written, most of my books are like 250,000 words.
Yeah.
So like after a certain point, and it's all one big series. So after a certain point, I try to be as good as about continuity as I possibly can. And that slows me down sometimes during the writing. Cause I'm like, oh, let me look up this book. And I actually have all, nine books actually open up in a draft in a PDF thing that I just like search. I'm like, oh, when did I mention this? Let me check this. Most of the time it's pretty clean, and then it goes to my editor for copy edits and line edits.
You have a continuity editor?
I don't have a continuity editor. I'm the continuity editor. As well as my readers.
I'm the continuity editor. Yeah.
As well as my readers. I have a typo channel on my Discord where they'll kind of like poke at me and be like, hey, you know, spelled this wrong. I'm like, cool.
Oh God. Yeah.
As you know, it's a blow to the ego to an extent, but it's good. They're always being helpful. And there's one that they found that they realized it was a continuity error actually in the book 9, which is coming out soon. And I was like, oh, okay. Got to fix this. And it was just a little line where it just needed to be like a little tweaked and adjusted. Just because it's something I mentioned two books prior, I think, you know, and they're like, whoa, this isn't what you said. I'm like, ah, crap. but things like that happen most of the time though, you know, especially with outline. That's part of outlining for me is, I end up with kind of what I want in the first place. There's not a lot of, oh, this scene doesn't work, let me scrap it and rewrite this into something else. There's not a lot of that. A lot of what I put in is very intentional. Is it perfect? No, nothing's ever perfect, but you know, it's intentional. And it's, and that's one of the big things also is, you know, nothing's going to be perfect, but, you know, when you finish a book, it teaches you a lot. Especially teaches you how to finish books.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah. Finishing books is a vastly different skill than starting books. Well, it's a new ad. If you're interested in having your story shouted out on this podcast, please reach out to me under critrpg.podcast@gmail.com. For now, I just finished the first book in my own series, Torchbearer. If you like a slow burn story about weak to OP main characters, mixing magic and technology and numbers going up, you might also enjoy this one. You can find the link to my link tree down below. And that's all for now. Thank you very much for listening and or watching, and let's get on with the show. Okay, cool. That being said, what's one thing that you learned and would now like to change or have changed?
I think the biggest thing that I learned from when I started in, you know, I say 2020, was how to manage stress better.
Oh, okay.
So that's a big one. Mostly because when it all started, you know, I prepped myself as best I could. I did the 20 chapters. I had a buffer to an extent. And then it became kind of exhilarating because like in April, it hit Royal Roads trending. There was their old Rising Stars, you know. It was like number one on trending for like a month. And that was very exciting. I got a lot of views. I got a lot more patrons, you know, all within 30 days. It was crazy. At the same time, COVID hit. And I was still working a full-time job and doing this. And so there was a very much rise and fall of all these kind of emotions. And that the kind of rise buoyed me through, like floated me on through a lot of like the worst parts of like the stress from work and COVID and all this other stuff. And then I sort of, you know, kind of got into a habit of just writing. But there reached a point where I was like, I wasn't managing. It was stressful, you know, getting, I think at the time I was only doing 3 chapters a week. Even just doing that, it was just stressful. The day coming up, I have to get this written, or, you know, in a couple of days. And I wasn't as fast writing as I am now even. So it was like, there was all this kind of stress that would build up and build up and build up from all sorts of sources and stuff. So over the years, I've definitely learned to pare down as much stress as I possibly can, you know, and that's mostly by eliminating the stressors that are causing that kind of stuff, as well as managing, managing my schedule. I mean, it ties into, I mean, I quit my job in 2021 and went to writing full time at that point, which was a bit of a leap. Because I was only surviving off of Patreon, and my Patreon was okay. You know, it was more than I was making my old job, but, you know, Patreon's a lot like a sales job, you know? You're getting...
It's very, very fickle.
Feast and famine, you know? You never know if, like, the next month it's just going to drop to nothing, you know? You're pretty sure it won't, but...
And also, like, in Germany, you got pretty good... Like, you're pretty well insured if you lose your job. Right. So I'm unemployed right now. I think I've mentioned this a few times and I'm looking for a new job slowly. But yeah, if you lose a job, you got, well, benefits.
And we don't.
Yeah. But if you're on Patreon, you don't, like if you're freelancing. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And being self-employed is, unless you're doing really well for yourself, being self-employed is really rough. I want to say the world over, but also, I mean, especially in America. There's a lot of extra stuff that you have to kind of worry about. So tying into the whole stress thing, what I found and what I learned it was partly how to outline my books, kind of managing my schedule on a day-to-day basis, and then maintaining what has been the phrase I've adopted is my priority list. Which is, it's a lot like, it's like work-life balance, you know, it's that same kind of concept. Priority list was a phrase, it was from a talk that James Hunter gave, who runs Shadow Valley Press. And he gave on burnout. He was talking about burnout and stuff. And priority list is just about sort of like a different kind of framework in your head. To a certain extent. So my priority list generally is, number one priority is my family. My number two priority is writing. Number three is my health. And number four is just everything else. We kind of lump it all in there. And my priority list changes day to day depending on what's happening, you know, and that helps with my stress because it's sort of conceptualizing this idea of like, okay, well, I don't always need to be 100% in this thing or always regretting that I'm not doing this thing or, you know, worrying about these things. It's just, you just have to maintain this, you know, it is a balance, but it's also a thing that kind of is in flux all the time because some days, especially when I have a deadline coming, writing goes to number one, you know, and my wife is awesome. I have two young kids and, but the, you know, managing that. And sometimes I'll be like, hey, I have this book that I need to get done in the next month and I'm X amount of words away and I need to focus. And so we make a priority of, you know, like really buckling down on it and getting that done. Other times I'm like, well, you know, especially right after I finish a book, like, hey, let's go do more things as a family, you know, let's, or at least let me go, you know, hang out with the kids and I go, you know, build Legos with my son or chat with my daughter. And it's just kind of being both present and aware that, you know, no one's the same always and things are going to change. And that has worked a lot to reduce my overall stress and really just kind of makes things a lot easier. And that's something I would love to have known, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah. The priority list sounds pretty dope because it is the hardest part about stress is, well, yeah, removing what stresses you, yeah, of course, but that's not always possible, right? So how do I remove not having a job? So,
yeah, yes.
I mean, obviously by finding one, but Yeah, it's very much like a struggle with yourself. And I do believe that mental health is super important, especially as an author, because your brain is your biggest tool. So your hands or your eyes, it's your it's your brain.
Yes. Yeah, mental health, huge. Stress always plays into that. Mental health, making sure your mental health is good and your physical health is good. So like, you know, doing stretches and being active, but also, kind of maintaining your, you know, the drive to keep working, you know, and it's harder. It's easier when, you know, I'll admit I've had a lot of success, and that makes it easier to kind of handle some stress, especially like if I see a negative comment about something or something like that. It's easier to brush that off when you kind of, you know, like are more sure in your process, and success kind of adds that surety to an extent, you know.
I really wish there was like, you know, a sure-proof way to remove stress, but there really isn't. It's just lots of working on yourself with yourself and finding out what stresses you and why, and then trying not to do that.
Yeah.
But okay. I think we should move to the next question.
Sure.
One book that you love, and why is it awesome?
The book I love, and it's probably a formative, probably the most formative book in the whole series, actually. But the first book is called The Curse of the Mistwraith. It's by Jannie Wirtz. It is an epic fantasy from mid-90s, maybe. I forget when it was first published. But it is a long series, and actually the last book in the series is being published like this May. It's like... I don't know how many books, 10 books maybe, but
11
books. I don't know. Curse of the Mistwraith is, it informed, I want to say, a lot of my, tastes, for a long time. Like I said, foundational. It's a big epic series. There's a lot of complicated characters. It has a lot of lyrical prose. And there's a focus on, music and magic, which is also pretty, really formative for me. You know, that kind of hand in hand with Wheel of Time did a lot on my, my young writer brain, to kind of inform a lot of things I found exciting and interesting and, wanted to explore. That is a very, very good, fun book, very sweeping, series.
It's super interesting because it's not her most famous book and not the most read one either, but still interesting.
Yeah, no, it isn't. But it's the one I really like.
Yeah, and that's legit, right? Something we have that.
Yeah, it is. It's something I've come to. I've been asked that question before, and a few years back I was like oh man, I don't know what you know, maybe my, you know, the one book I want to, you know, wreck would be or whatever. And it's definitely crystallized as I've kind of thought more on that. And, it's definitely a, how, she approaches magic is really interesting because it feels very magical in a way that is, kind of mystical and unknowable to an extent, which I like a lot. But is also very more kind of visceral than, say, Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Because Lord of the Rings is very much like, it's magic, but it's also just like, he just knows how to use things in the world, you know, like, you know, he hits the right rock kind of thing. It's more about, Lord of the Rings is very, it's famously soft magic system, but it's also very tied to like just their knowledge of how the world works. It's kind of their magic.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, many people don't, but you probably do know that, like, Tolkien was, like, a very, very famous, like, scholar of Norse mythology, right? So the entire idea of, you know, the Ring of Power is very much tied to Norse mythology or Norse customs. Norse customs in the Middle Ages were a ring giver. Well, it's a thane, a thane, who would then give you a ring for good services, and that would give you a certain amount of power in your society because you have a gold ring from the thane, from the chieftain. Sorry, it was a quick aside.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, the idea of how magic works is very much informed by stuff like Beowulf, for example, or Gawain and the Green Knight, because the magic is never really explained all that much because people didn't, you know, write down all the magic systems back then. But they saw magic as a far more natural thing that just kind of happens, you know, like lightning strikes. They just kind of happen.
Yeah.
And so Beowulf just knows all those things. And he has a word hoard, which is an amazing word, that he opens to like do parley with monsters and stuff. And Tolkien took that and ran with it. And if you're reading it, it really, really harks back to a lot of the Norse mythology.
It does. I like Lord of the Rings. When I was a kid, I read it and I was like, wow, this is boring. It's just the way it's written. It's very slow. It's very, you know, it's a very particular kind of way. And I came off of reading a lot of epic fantasy in the 90s and started reading that. I was young and I was reading it and I was just like, oh God. When I read it later, when I had more appreciation for it, I enjoyed it a lot more. But I'd say like, there's a lot of epic fantasy stories, and that's kind of where my heart lies with a lot of epic fantasy, where the thing I liked about it was this sense of the main character getting some sort of power, right? You know, they were the chosen one. They were whatever. They would get some sort of power. They'd improve with that power, and they'd use it to defeat the bad guy at the end of the book. And it, I remember reading a lot of stories, and it was like, I would latch onto those kind of things a lot more. And I came to appreciate more like the relationships and the story and all this other stuff, the plots and the story structures, especially as I kind of learned more about writing as I got older. But it was always kind of drew me back to that. And so when progression fantasy or lit RPG kind of kicked off and I started to become aware of it, probably like 2010 or something like that, I was like, wow, this is really kind of ticking a lot of boxes for things I really like. It really kind of prepped me for realizing what I wanted more of, which was a lot of the progression fantasy stuff.
The best part of Harry Potter is when he learns a new spell. Yeah.
Well, the best, like with Harry Potter, and Harry Potter is kind of fraught itself at this point. But the thing when I was a kid, never gonna take away my memories as a kid, but when I was a kid and I liked, and I was reading Harry Potter, the thing I liked more was sort of like learning about the world and learning about, you know, this. And I kind of wanted to be with any kind of magic school. I always wanted to like stay there more, you know, go to those classes to an extent, you know, learn more about the world. You know, that wasn't the story that was being told, but there's a certain kind of amount of thing about magic school stories where you're just like, come on, just linger in the school more, please. Like about the school itself instead of about the whatever threats, you know, outside.
I kind of wonder, is that, do you think, because so obviously lit RPG and our entire space is doing it completely different. And I kind of wonder if that's inherent in lit RPG or if that's more of a case of people just taking more space and more time because we're not inhibited by, you know, big publishing editors.
That's definitely an aspect. Yeah. There's there's no one saying, hey, you need to cut this down to 80,000 words.
Yeah.
Cause if they did that to me, that would be the worst. I couldn't function. I could not write maybe I could. I've never tried. The smallest book I wrote was 122,000 words. And I was like, yeah, this is tight. This is great. everything else is 200,000 plus. You know, that space and we're not inhibited. And to be honest, it benefits us to have a longer book to a certain extent. As far as money wise and, you know, marketing wise, you know, people like a long audiobook, you know, when you see 20 plus hours in an audiobook, you know, and it's the same credit that a, you know, 10 hour audiobook is for some people, it's like, well, I'm going to get the 20, you know, and more bang for my buck, you know, which is true, you know, to an extent. But it's like, I think a lot of it has to do with there's the decompression, like you said. You know, it's a decompression of the moment where you can kind of linger in these spaces more and there's no editors shoving us or at least editors saying like, well, that's probably not a good idea. We'll find out that by ourselves if it's a good idea or not. But I mean, you see from the rise of a lot of slice of life stuff, you see the rise from like cozy fantasy stuff, even people like to linger in that kind of thing. And I think it's mostly, I think at least the reason all that stuff is successful, is has to do with a lot of like people have this. There's a lot of fantasies people have, you know, yeah. and they vary pretty wildly. But there's things that people like. They love the idea of being like, for say, in a magic school, or being mm-hmm. on another world exploring this ancient civilization, you know, where you can kind of linger there and kind of draw out things because people want to read about it and they want to like, they would love to explore that thing for themselves, and glossing mm-hmm. over it can sometimes be frustrating because like, hey, that was interesting. That was really cool. Let's linger there for some reason, you know? And kind of really depends on the story you're telling, obviously, but it is definitely a style that I enjoy very, very much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. And even if you're looking at, I mean, yours too, to an extent, right? But I think people mostly know, Hero Fights of Monsters or Prime Hunter, even people have like long ass discussions about things that don't really matter to the plot all that much, mm-hmm. right? The famous beach scenes, just kind of, you know, having a picnic. It's kind of, it brings you closer to the characters, yeah. which is, I think, what people like.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. People like, there's always a subset of people who, the moment you're not doing anything plot related, they call it fluff. And this is worthless and it's nothing. Mm-hmm. But there's a larger majority that I've seen that really enjoy the characters. Characters are always going to drive a story for most people. They may forget your plot, you know, whether it's clever or not and stuff, but they'll remember your characters if you wrote good characters, which kind of goes back to my original kind of thing about like making sure they're a solid character before they hit the page. And then you have something for those readers to kind of latch onto.
Yeah. I still want to kind of, I mean, the point about the characters is that book up there, Art of Character, David Corbett. Mm-hmm. I recommend it a lot. It has this really cool idea about writing scenes that aren't necessarily going to be in your book, but scenes that pit your main character in a situation where their primary desire is being denied. I do think that The Art of Character is the least formulaic, most open-minded, and at the same time also most in-depth book about characters I've ever read. So there's no checklist in there. It literally just tells you like in very, very psychological terms and very very high-brow prose or high-brow writing, I should say, like what exactly makes up a character. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes a bit cumbersome because of that. Mm-hmm. But if you've read it like four or five times, you're like, oh, wait, makes so much sense. I still kind of wish I could use it more because, mm-hmm. like I said, I'm maybe not quite there yet. But what you're saying makes absolute sense. People love characters. People want to hang out with their characters more. And there's only one thing that I find very interesting and not many people do. Long-term character growth with mm-hmm. characters who have massive flaws. There's only one book that I can like properly think about where the main character really engages with their primary flaw over a long period of time and actually tries to overcome it.
Yes. So, I think that is always tricky, especially in our genre, mostly because there's a lot of readers who do not like flawed characters. Any flaw, it can be seen as a sort of defect, you know, which, I mean, it is, but some people will respond kind of negatively to that. I think it definitely can be done, absolutely. And I would love to see it done more. I also like to see, in my stories, I try to, I have a very kind of large cast. We focus mostly on, you know, Felix as the main character, and there's a few people around him, but we'll have people kind of move in and out, as well as the cast is probably like five or six kind of around him that kind of we deal with. I also like to do arcs for like one, maybe two of them per book, where they're kind of moving through, kind of getting over something or getting through something, in a way that is there is measurable growth by the end, not just in a lit RPG way, but in a sort of like a personality kind of way. Mm. And I think that that contributes a lot to making a character feel more both relatable, real, and interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I have a character, Evie, who goes through a pretty solid arc, especially in book 6, that I've had a lot of positive reactions to, as well as another character, Attar, who's gone through similar kind of things. And I think it's definitely always worthwhile to have characters engage with their fears and their desires and their flaws in a way to kind of like either overcome them or, you know, maybe not overcome them or, you know, it depends on what you're trying to do, but it only adds flavor.
In lit RPG, like the protagonist cannot have crippling flaws. It is completely impossible. Whereas, you know, most traditional authors will tell you that it is a good idea. I mean, like if you're writing like literary fiction, not like the genre stuff, is because that's the main struggle.
Yeah.
Right. The main struggle is character versus themselves. And they have to have this disabling flaw. But in lit RPG and most genre fantasy or most genre fiction, really, the plot is somewhere else. So there's not really that much space for the main character to be their own worst enemy because they have a real worst enemy who's trying to destroy the world.
It's a very external conflicts setup. I think internal conflicts can be done again, but I think it's definitely something you have to have a light touch on because, like you said, having a big detrimental flaw in the main character is a good way to kill a series because people are not gonna they don't want to read about this person because a lot of lit RPG and progression fantasy kind of is predicated on facilitating sort of like there's power fantasy to it, but it's just the fantasies of, you know, like capability of, because lit RPG is all built on and the reason I fell in love with it originally on self-improvement, and kind of like making yourself better by, you know, through, you know, level ups or whatever. Though I do think inherent in that, because it's self-improvement, right? Mm-hmm. There should be, you know, there, you should also be kind of improving them emotionally, mentally, you know, as well as physically and magically or whatever.
I think most authors, really the best authors who sell the most, you included, by the way, sorry for the brown nosing, but I think what you guys do that you get away with so well is the main character doesn't have these flaws, right? Mm-hmm. But the other characters do, because the main character is just a window into the world. And tensions may run high, emotions may run high, main character may be scared a little bit or not as much, but it's just to validate what the reader might feel at the point. Mm-hmm. The other characters, though, right? I'm thinking about Warformed right now. So the first one was called Iron Prince. Mm-hmm. Next one is Fire and Song. There's a side character there that is very unsympathetic at the start. And then in the second book, we really understand why they are the way they are. And most people loved that. If it had been the main character, I don't think anyone would have ever read that book. Mm-hmm. So really interesting, because also you don't want to be in that guy's head the entire time.
That's also a big thing.
A
part of like kind of the fantasy part of it that people are really kind of buying into in the genre is sort of like that self-insert to an extent. I don't think it's 100% always necessary, but there is an extent where you are self-inserting into the main character, or at least the most readers are. And if you have a awful character, they don't want to hang out there. They need to have redeeming qualities. They need to have things that are awesome or things that are cool, things that are, you know, that they're kind of on board with. And you're right. You're right. I agree with the secondary characters. And it's one of the reasons why I'm like, you should have secondary characters that are interesting and have established, you know, established things. The first characters the main character meets, they all have their own kind of motivations. Mm-hmm. Some of them are You know, like brash, some are kind of more honorable. One's actually kind of a dick. But I can make them a jerk, without angering people necessarily, because I can play with that. There's more lenience in kind of giving them more, I guess more personality to an extent, or at least more, more negative aspects, I guess.
Yeah, no, totally. We should move on to shout outs.
Now, question for you. Shout outs in regards to my work, or
I mean, in general, this is very much free for all. So you can shout out anyone you like. Usually what people do is they shout out lesser known authors or friends of theirs. Mm-hmm. So whatever you want to do, like you can shout out George R. R. Martin.
Well, I mean, if I was shouting out anybody, it would always be J.M. Clark, who writes Mark of the Fool.
Yeah.
It's a great series. Great guy. Great author, too. His other series, Rune Seeker. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Is also good and really fun. I had to remember his author name, V.A. Lewis. Another good friend of mine, also very prolific writer. I think he one of the crazy writers that I know that writes a ton. I think he wrote like something like 170,000 words this month, or something like that, and which blows me away. It's crazy.
So Melos, right? Melos D.
Yeah, yeah, his username. Yeah, and and also Actus. Actus, another prolific writer who is writing a very fun story that I've been really enjoying recently, which is I think it's Rise of the Living Forge by him, which is very fun. I think I actually subscribed to his Patreon for that one, actually, reading ahead.
I wish I had money for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you should go subscribe to my Patreon.
Yeah.
We have money for Patreon.
But all the people I try to read as often as possible. Sadly, which I don't know if you've experienced this, when I started writing, I started reading a lot less. I just ran out of time.
So many people tell me about, like, how can you not read as an author? I'm like, you just don't have time. Yeah. Like, that being said, maybe we should all read a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
It's good for the brain.
Yeah, I used to read something like 20 books a month, something like that. Like a lot. A lot of that was driven by a lack of creative endeavors at the time, you know? So writing kind of fulfills a lot of that for me. So I'm not so much kind of desperate grabbing for books or anything. And then also it's time, and then it's it's my editor brain kind of kicks on sometimes when I'm reading other things. I need to like shut it down.
Yeah.
I read, I mostly just want to enjoy.
Yeah. It's hard. And then like it can range anywhere from, you know, like, oh, this is interesting, let me just write this down because I had an idea, all the way to like putting on like a beret and going like, why did you wrote it like this? This is terrible. And of course, me with my 1,337 followers on Royal Road have the perfect opinion. Like, no.
It's very easy to be overly critical of other works, especially when I'm not writing them. And, but it's also one of those things. It's also just like, shut it down. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to enjoy myself, try to read and stuff. And I'll kind of like mosey on through it, but it's something I try. I try to get two or three books a month now, which is pathetic compared to what I used to do, but it's, you know, it's something, working my way through stuff.
I mean, that's cool. Right. So, I'm still reading through Seth Ring's Dreamer's Throne, which is a really good little RPG. Yeah.
I want to read that one. That's been on my list. I like Seth. I've met him a few times. He's a great dude. I've enjoyed his other works. I read the, what was it called? It was the Thor, his main character. What?
Novaterra? Battle Metro?
Novaterra. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Novaterra, which I really, really enjoyed. And then, what, Battle Mage Farmer, I also enjoyed. I haven't finished that one yet, though.
I've been craving a good new MMORPG, lit RPG, kind of going back to the roots.
They are really nice. I think they're fun. Unfortunately, the market kind of moved away from them. People don't really like to read them as much anymore. I'm sure at some point they'll come back.
I'm going to lean outside out the window so hard that my feet are dangling off the floor. And I'm going to say that Ripple System exists, so no one needs to write anymore. obviously, this is like half a joke. Please write whatever you like. And I'm quite sure there's like other very, very quality, high quality, but I really love Ripple System.
Yeah.
Ripple System. Yeah. Ripple System.
Actually, for a period of time, Unbound was going to be a VR MMO. Oh. That was the idea. I think it was the original name was Unbound Shores. That was like the name of the game, you know.
But if you want to hear more about that, subscribe to my Patreon. Cliffhanger. Yeah. No, because we gotta cut it here. Thank you so much for listening and watching. Please like and subscribe. The followers really help me out because, well, literally a lot of money is tied into that. So following me actually allows me to do this more, come up with new ideas, host more people. If you want to support me more than with just a few clicks that you can do, thank you. Try Patreon. For every hour of podcast, I have another hour on Patreon. So you can find every link down below. And I thank you very much for listening and or watching. Nicoli, do you have any last words?
No. It's been great talking to you. This is fantastic. Buy my book. Oh, I guess the last thing is my book 9 in my Unbound series is out March 13th. Mm-hmm. So that's just a couple weeks from time of recording this. It's another doozy, 230,000 words, continuation of Felix's adventures on the continent. I'm busy writing book 10 already.
Ooh, nice. Well, thank you so much. It's great that you just came by and unwound. and I'll see everyone next time.